Blog Talk Radio.
During the pandemic, my lifestyle drastically changed. My income came to a screeching halt. You have to understand, I'm a hustler. I'm a legit entrepreneur. I sell things. I come in contact with people all the time. I have to stay safe. I didn't have a choice but to trust the vaccine. And if you live the type of lifestyle that I live, you out here in these streets and you hustling, an entrepreneur like me, why not do it safely? So I want everybody to take this seriously. Take a shot at staying healthy. Get the vaccine.
Barefaces Legal Radio, Saturdays, noon to 1:30 Eastern Time, Pacific Time, 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. Learn about your bareface rights and help keep us without face diapers.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Join me, Dahl Arntzen, your host, Fridays, the Alaskan Patriot Network. I will bring you conservative views and news, both at home here in Alaska and around the world. So be sure to tune in Fridays, 2 to 5 p.m. Alaska Daylight Time, the Alaskan Patriot Network.
Please check out the Barefooters Legal Radio Show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefooters Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Good Sunday morning to everybody out there in Freedomizer Radio land. You have reached Everlasting Covenant, Free from Paul. It is December 11th, 2022, and we want to welcome everybody to today's show of Everlasting Covenant, Free from Paul. We are a fellowship on Sundays, 9 a.m. Pacific, 10 Mountain, 11 Central, noon Eastern. We're here for an hour and a half. And you may call area code 319-527-6208 to listen and join the discussion. Pressing 1 will get you in the queue to speak. And your host today is Rachel Hodge. Not sure if Chris and Brandy are going to make it. I haven't heard from them this morning, but hopefully they will make it over. We study the old path referred to in Jeremiah 6:16. This is what the Father says. Stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths. Where is the good way? Then walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. But the people said, unfortunately, we will not walk in it. We do this broadcast because we want to walk in the old path and study the prophets, the lost books, and the words of the Messiah only, free of the lying pen of the scribes, referred to in Jeremiah 8:8, which states, how can you say we are wise and the law of the Father is with us, when in fact the lying pen of the scribes has produced a deception? So we must watch out for a deception in both the Old and the New Testaments of the Bible, right? What we come to the knowledge of when we dive really deep into the book is that there are two paths, one of life and one of death, that are both written into the Bible. And so, therefore, it's very important to study. Also, I would like to note that we study free of the opposing gospel according to Paul, free of the religious corruption, and also free of the influence of the Roman Catholic Church. Again, you can join us weekly on Sundays at noon to 1:30 Eastern. Welcome to our fellowship where we expose religion and explore the nature of the Father and his ways. Shalom, and as always, search with all of your hearts. So I want to open up to Chapter 6 of Jesus Words Only this morning by Douglas J. Del Tondo. Paul contradicts Jesus about idol meat. Introduction. Jesus in Revelation 2, 6, and 14 takes on those persons teaching the Ephesians that it was acceptable to eat meat sacrificed to idols. Among them, Jesus says, were the Nicolaitans. The Nicolaitans were an actual historical group. They taught Paul's doctrine of grace, permitted them to eat meat sacrificed to idols. Jesus commends the Ephesians for refusing to listen to the Nicolaitans on the issue of eating meat sacrificed to idols. Yet the Nicolaitans were not merely deducing it was permissible to eat such meat from Paul's doctrine of grace. Paul, in fact, clearly teaches three times that there is nothing wrong, per se, in eating meat sacrificed to idols. This is found in Romans chapter 14, 21, 1 Corinthians 8, 4 through 13, and 1 Corinthians 10, 19 through 29. Again, if you are writing down verses, that's Romans 14, 21, 1 Corinthians 8, 4 through 13, and 1 Corinthians 10, 19 through 29. I would like to go through those later in the broadcast. However, Jesus, I'm reading as it is written. I don't use the word Jesus. It's a pagan name. But for purposes of reading this book, where the Jesus that it's speaking of is the Messiah. However, Jesus, as we will see three times in Revelation, says it is flatly wrong. And that's important to note because dispensationalism indicates that there is a lineage of time where things changed. And playing devil's advocate, even if that were true, Revelation comes after the dispensational so-called gospel, according to Paul, that he claims was given to him by the Messiah. Cannot be if the Messiah will not deny himself, and in Revelation he flatly claims this is wrong. So we see that there is a very big fly in the ointment that we need to pursue and not try and make clay cleave to iron. It will not. Daniel tells us that. The Bible says when the Father commands something, we are not free to diminish it by articulating our own exceptions. What thing soever I command you, that shall ye observe to do. Thou shalt not add thereunto, nor diminish it. Deuteronomy 12, verses 32. Let's explore thoroughly the origin of this command against eating meat sacrificed to idols. Let's see also the starkness of the contradiction between Paul and Jesus. Jerusalem Council ruling on meat sacrificed to idols. Acts chapter 15 recounts James's ruling at the Jerusalem Council. The issue presented was whether circumcision was necessary for salvation. The outcome was a decision involving what behaviors Gentiles had to follow as Christians. The first decision was to prohibit Gentiles who wanted to become Christians from committing fornication. The second decision was to prohibit eating meat sacrificed to idols. The principle is drawn from Exodus chapter 34, 13 through 16. Paulinists claim that this prohibition on eating meat sacrificed to idols, which was sold in meat markets, was not an absolute command. It was flexible enough to fit Paul's approach. Paul taught idol meat was perfectly acceptable unless someone else thought it was wrong. Paulinists argue that the Jerusalem Council only meant to prohibit eating such meat if it would undermine a weaker brother who thought it was wrong, as Paul teaches. However, there is no basis to believe the prohibition in Acts chapter 15 is merely a prohibition on undermining someone else, causing him to violate his conscience. It is clear that eating meat sacrificed to idols is simply wrong in itself. It is also no less absolute a prohibition than the prohibition on fornication. In other words, this prohibition to eat meat sacrificed to idols was equally important as not fornicating. It was extremely important. Had the Jerusalem Council ruling intended the eating idol meat rule to be only a command to follow during social intercourse, then the council used the wrong words to convey such an interpretation. In fact, the prohibition on eating meat sacrificed to idols was stated three times in Acts. It was never once stated with an exception or qualification. There is no hint that eating such meat was permissible in your private meals. In fact, when we later look at Jesus' words in Revelation absolutely condemning such practice, Jesus is talking after Paul's words are written down, which is a note I had previously stated. Had Jesus intended to affirm Paul's view that eating such meat is permissible, Jesus' absolute directives against ever eating such meat were the wrong way to communicate this. Jesus left no room to find hair-splitting exceptions. This absolute prescription first appears at the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15:20. Initially, James decided that we write unto them that they abstain from pollutions of idols, Acts 15:20. Second, Luke then quotes James' letter to the Gentiles, as saying one of the necessary things is you abstain from things sacrificed to idols. That's found in Acts 15:29. James reiterates this for a third and final time in Acts chapter 21. James is reminding Paul that what the ruling was at the Jerusalem Council, he tells Paul that previously we wrote giving judgment that they, the Gentiles, should keep themselves from things sacrificed to idols. That's Acts 21:25. Okay, James restates the principle unequivocally. It is a flat prohibition like any food law or the prohibition on fornication. As James states the rule, it has nothing to do with the rules only at social gatherings. It has no limited application. There is no exception to permit eating idol meat at home. Jesus' confirmation of Jerusalem Council ruling. Jesus, in Revelation chapter 2, 14, faults the churches at Pergamum for tolerating those who teach it is acceptable to eat meat sacrificed to idols and commit fornication. Jesus says some hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel to eat things sacrificed to idols and to commit fornication. And this is very important to note as well, because if you start down this path where you live as a set-apart one and start removing things from your life that are traditional in our society but against what the Father is saying, and much of it through the Messiah, you will find that people will start calling you a stumbling block because you are pointing back to the Ten Commandments and the Sabbath day and so forth and so on. And this is a very important verse to remember to politely state back that the Messiah himself calls the one who is a stumbling block the one who allows meat eating, sacrifice to idols, and fornication, not the one who points back to the Father's commandments. Very important. Nor did Jesus say it was wrong only if the person involved thought eating such meat was wrong. Jesus simply laid down a prohibition, nothing more, nothing less. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 2 prohibits diminishing from God's true inspired words by making up exceptions. In this Revelation 2:14 passage, the use of the word scandalon is important. And just one moment here. Let's see here. Okay. Jesus does not say the error was eating meat sacrificed to idols only if you believed an idol was real, nor did Jesus say it was wrong only if the person involved thought eating such meat was wrong. Jesus simply laid down a prohibition, nothing more, nothing less. Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 2 prohibits diminishing the Father's true inspired words by making up exceptions. I thought that was worth repeating. Definitely. And Chris and Brandy have made it.
Hello,
all right.
Rachel.
Hi, Chris and Brandy. Hello. Shabbat shalom. Or shalom shalom. It's not Shabbat, I don't guess.
Yeah,
it might be. I know it goes every 7 days, and y'all keep better track of that than I do.
Yeah, great.
As far as the Father's calendar, it's not because it's Sunday, radio audience.
Yeah.
That's the pagan version. But it does rotate, so it does end up falling on every day of the week at some point in time.
Yeah.
Currently it's Thursday in the Gregorian calendar.
Thursday, okay.
Yeah, it's great to be here. We apologize, we're running late, and I text the wrong number. We were in the middle of leaving family's house, and it just
time got away from us.
Yeah,
that's okay. I think I hopped on here at 11:02 myself today, so it's fine. Just been. Reading from Jesus' Words Only, Paul contradicts Jesus about idol meat is the topic. So,
yeah,
what we've been
reading.
Yeah,
we got to hear a little bit of that. We're enjoying listening to it.
Oh, good. Yeah, sometimes when I'm reading, I don't get to check the dashboard every quite as frequently. So, sorry if I kept you waiting.
No,
so,
it's fine.
We're just talking about Revelation 2:14 being such an important verse to commit to memory when you start on this path of living as a set-apart one and start removing the leaven from your life, because this is one of the first things that I got accused of when I started walking set-apart was being a stumbling block to the Christian, because I was pointing to the commandments and stopped eating meat and started Sabbath keeping to the best of my knowledge and ability. And so apparently your traditional grace promoting Christian thinks that the commandments are the stumbling block. And the Messiah clearly tells us right here what the stumbling block is. It's eating meat, sacrifice to idols, and allowing fornication. He tells the church at Pergamum, Herga mom that they are in trouble for tolerating those teachings.
Well, that would make sense as to why it is so hard for the nominative Christian believer to come out of the doctrine of error in, because they do eat this food sacrificed to idols, so it's hard for them to hear with hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Built in veil already.
And I was thinking about when you said you came out and you were looking at these things, you know, well, you came to another, a deeper, like going into the scriptures, like what does he really want from me, the Father, really, and like, I was thinking about what you were saying about how you were coming out of Paul and looking at the Sabbath, and like, those are things that, I don't know, this whole system of like a religious spirit does not want people to look at or to question. And we were
questioning why you believe
thinking.
What you believe.
Yeah,
why
critical thinking is such a huge thing for our freedom, you know, the right of who we are to be able to make those decisions. So I was like, when you were saying that, I was like, oh, no. Been through a hard time,
you
come out of those things. Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of denominations today, they actually, through their dogma and doctrine, they take away the free choice of the individual. Because
yeah.
You must comply to them and their way of playing rather than the individual relationship, which comes from within, whereas Messiah said, the king of the valley, he was found from within. There's obviously things that you think about.
That's a very good point. In Paul's undoing the commandments of the Father, he does lay a lot of his own rules down, and the many of the denominations have formed because they've honed in on one particular rule or another, such as the covering of the head for the women, and you have denominations where the girls actually wear the little doily on their head, and you find out that it's because of this one scripture that Paul states, and you know, and then he undoes his own laws in other places, and this is just the fruit of him and his own confession that he is all things to all people, and depending on his audience, he conforms into a blending in chameleon. You know, so that there's a lot of confusion on what the way is if you are following him, and then he just erases everything on the board that he's put up there and calls it all covered under grace and the blood of Jesus. And so, yeah, definitely. A lot of lack of freedom following Paul because of his own stipulations that he puts out there. Now, he tries to free people from the law and make people feel like you're no longer under the law as though it's some kind of prison. But then his putting his own shackles on people, he's actually creating an imprisonment. And sadly to say, he's leading people through the wrong gate. So the imprisonment that people will experience when following him will be one of eternity. And that's the horror of it, you know, and that's why we talk about the everlasting covenant free from Paul. Because to be following the Father and following holiness, it may seem like a struggle in the flesh at times, but that is where the true freedom comes from, is to make the correct and straight way in your life.
Yeah. Where we learn how to rule over the flesh and walk in the Spirit according to his good will.
Correct.
I'm always how does that help me grow? I mean, you have to have, if I can claim grace for everything I do, then to me that's a source of atrophy. It's like a muscle that loses strength. Because you, through the trials, because of our belief, that helps shape and form us in our refinement and being drawn closer into His likeness, the likeness of our Creator, that we actually, we grow with these things. So we acknowledge that we do have weaknesses, and there are things that we need to address, repent of, and relearn, and have our soul rule over our flesh, so that we rightly rule our own lives. And then as we continue to walk in these ways, He reveals Himself more to us in ways that are profound to our own personal relationship. And then we also become an example just through that process. We become an example to other people, and I believe that's how we become a light that's on a hill that's uncovered, because we are free enough to know, to acknowledge this thing within ourselves, that we are not ashamed to say that through the Messiah we are now healed of these things. And it's these things are they're inherent with the flesh of being born into this fallen state. And so it's not shameful to acknowledge that we have this fallen state. It's shameful to not acknowledge it and claim a grace and not address it to try to clean up your lives. Because there's so much of Scripture talks about don't be mixed. Remove, separate the clean from the unclean. And so if you're constantly causing a grace, then how is that taking any personal responsibility of a real choice and a real relationship with the one who made it?
Exactly. It's a grand sweep under the carpet.
Yes.
And it negates in, is it Ecclesiastes or it the other Old Testament book that starts with an E that says, in the day that the man repents, he will not be charged his sin, but in the day that the holy man sins, he will be charged with his sin, and that the father will not be charged for the sins of the son, and the son will not be charged for the sins of the father. And I mean, there's something wrong with the doctrine if we're changing the words. We're changing an everlasting covenant. When the Father said he changes not, and then we throw dispensationalism at it and say it changed. That ought to alarm anyone who's truly seeking.
I believe that the word has been tampered with, and also there is the word of the wheat is sown in there and the word of the tare, and that this generation, it's our job to go in and dig deep into the word and find out truly what is Torah, what is instruction. And what we do is we look at instruction and say, okay, is this an instruction that's going to be eternal? You know, is it eternally going to be good for us? Are we going to eternally be killing animals to feed the flesh? Or are we going to eternally be producing life? And so that's the Torah that we follow. And there's a lot of people out there say you've got to follow the Torah. Well, which Torah are you talking about? And so we're you know, unashamedly repenting of our fallen nature and saying we want to come out of that fallen nature, and we want to know the Torah of the living Elohim, the living eternal one that gives us the eternal breath and eternal spirit of life and truth. And so I'm glad I got to say that, because I've been wanting to say that a while. I've seen so many people saying you got to follow Torah, or they'll use the word that says, unless you follow my Torah, you know, fill in the blank. And we've got
what they fill in the blank with the religious Jewish Torah.
Yes.
knowing that his Torah is following his voice.
Yeah.
It's a personal inclination of when we seek him, he reveals himself to us. But it's interesting that even Torah, as it's spelled in the Hebrew letters out of it, it's the Tawa Resh Hay, which etymologically, as in each letter also has a definition, it has its own meaning as well as put together in words. So you have the Ta means mark or covenant. Wa means is a connector or male. Resh is the head of the man on the top of the mountain. And hey is behold or see. And so when you see Torah and you break it down into that second witness of itself, then I can see that the mark is connecting the head of man to see. And so my Torah is...
Say again, you see that the mark that connects the man causes him to see? Is that what you said?
Yes. That's basically how I see what Torah is. Because
okay.
It's the intention that reveals our Creator.
Right. And allows us to see who he is.
Yes.
I feel like that's one reason why it was really important to the Antichrist spirit to use the truth in order to taint man, because I feel like if something brand new was invented, man would have seen through it, because it's in us to see truth.
Yes.
Because we are his creation, and if he had just invented something brand new, some other religion, some other truth that was not tied to truth, we would see through it, and then we would see the truth, and we would compare the two, and we would say, this is clearly truth, this is clearly falsehood. But to have taken truth and then muddled it, laid over a falsehood over it, and say it changed, and it changed in this way, and it's easier now, and now you don't have that mean entity that's over you that's making you keep these commandments, was kind of a brilliant way for the enemy to thrive in his great deception, I feel like. But it makes it all the more sad to me that people are following their pastor and going that way rather than seeking out the truth for themselves. I saw and actually posted a meme this week that showed Joel Osteen stating to his congregation, God wants you to live your best life now. And then right after that, it compares it to the Messiah talking to his disciples, you shall be hated of all men for my sake. And just comparing the two messages just do not jive. And it's when you can really break it down and see that the Messiah's words have been watered down until you're drinking toxin to drink what the church is serving today. It's just so far away from the Messiah, you know, and his words. And it truly takes a person that is not living their everyday life to live it for themselves in prosperity and fitting in with the crowd to be able to hunker down and say, okay, I'm ready. Whatever it is, whoever it is you are, I want to follow you. However it causes me to feel embarrassed or uncomfortable because it goes against the grain of society, that will happen. It absolutely will happen. Just on a funny side note, my great uncle, my grandmother's brother, told my mom today tell Rachel she's convinced us, and I don't even remember telling him that the earth is flat. Maybe I did at one point. Tell Rachel I'm thoroughly convinced. I was out driving recently, and it was flatter than a pancake. So, anyway, I know he's making a joke or feel that he is, but it's true, though. We just need to open our eyes and look at what we see versus what we're taught and told. It's right there in front of our eyes. Anyway, I thought that was cute, kind of funny.
That is. I'm sure he said
funny too. And my mom surprised me. You know what she said back? And she's not sold on flat earth. She said, well, you know, Truett, the Bible does say that there's a dome over the earth. So she... I about fell out of my chair to find out that conversation took place. But she ultimately chose not to do the COVID vaccine, and she had 3 appointments to be taken down to do it, and she wanted me to drive her. And I told her, you're going to have to get an Uber. I will not drive you to an appointment that, you know, is going to... Yeah, and so she just kept listening to me, and now she tells other people, you know, and my great aunt that regrets it. She's talked to her a lot about the things I've said on that. But anyway, I'm digressing a little bit. Sorry about that.
Well, no, yeah, that's wrong. And it's speaking a truth that needs to be constantly spoken, because on the flip side of the mainstream peoples, you know, they're constantly speaking their propaganda. So it's good to always have be the true voice that's in opposition to what the mainstream is purveying. It's interesting. Yesterday I heard a fella, maybe it was a man, but anyway, she was talking. She had a relative tell her that, and this is in context of what's going on in the world, you know, things are kind of disrupted right now. There's a lot of unrest and maybe it's causing some people to fear, I don't know. But as far as like going to war, wars, rumors of wars, and this fella, he said, just focus on being prosperous and blending in. And that is like, and that was like his good advice. And to me, that seems to be the way the world is. It's like, keep your head down, don't draw attention to yourself, and be prosperous. And as long as you're prosperous, then somehow you've attained a holy virtue. But to me, that is simple cowardice. It's like, you're looking to prosper, but you're going to keep your head down, and essentially, it's like, okay, well, we're going to still live in a federal republic. Well, not that we do specifically now anyway. It's more of a social democracy. But anyway, or are we going to be a...
Well, and that goes directly against the Messiah as well. And, I mean, he talks about being poor, being willing to be poor, and a few possessions, having no place to lay your head as he did, and sticking out like a sore thumb, being the lamp on top of a hill that shines your light so before men that they can see it. It doesn't say they're going to like it. In fact, he said, I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. So we really need to pay attention to the words that the Messiah said, and look at our lives, and if we're fitting in too well and things are too hunky-dory, we found a tribe of like-minded people and we're just, everything's hunky-dory, but more than likely you're not doing what he said to do, because that causes friction and it causes pushback and it causes hatred, it causes mean words. It causes unjust exclusion from the group. It causes rejection. All kinds of manner of ill will result toward you. And he that endures to the end shall be saved. So be of good cheer that if there are those uncomfortable things happening in your life and you're following him, that it's because you're making the enemy very uneasy, that you might take one of his that he counts as his back for the Father, and the enemy doesn't like that.
Well, James 4:4, you know, he says, ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye not that friendship of the world is enmity with Elua? Whoever therefore will be a friend of the world is an enemy of the Most High.
Absolutely. Welcome, Ron.
Hey.
Hello.
Shalom.
Shalom.
So,
you're kind of muffled on my end, or it could be us.
Yeah, y'all's connection, Chris and Brandy, sounds like there's a little bit of a background echo, and I don't know if hanging up and calling back in would help, or if you're on two lines or one line or what. I can hear Ron perfectly well, but I thought about telling you about that earlier, but I didn't know if it would help, because I know a lot of times y'all are out in the boonies, and there isn't anything that will make it clear. So I can hear you fine if I concentrate really well, but I don't know if you want to try that or not. Either way, I'll watch the dashboard if you do want to come back in and let you back in.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like once you're on the phone with someone who's driving, and they put it like they do that,
through
the car. You're driving somewhere. No, but what you said earlier about how, you know, the enemy always starts with the truth and then twists it. That's what the devil's been doing from the beginning. He starts with the foundation of truth. To Eve, he's like, so did he really tell you that you can't eat any of the trees? He's like, oh no, we can eat anything except that one, because he said that if we eat it, we'll die. And then then he twists. He's like, you won't surely die. And like, I think it was actually Chris who posted a meme that I saw earlier today where it showed the vaccine. And it said, like, the devil hasn't changed his lie. It shows a picture of, like, the COVID, someone getting a COVID vaccine. He says, he hasn't changed his lie. And he says, you won't surely die. Like, get the vaccine. And this is the same thing that Paul does. He's like, take some part. It really bothers me lately. So I've been going back and forth with a certain someone. I don't want to say their name, but I'm sure you know who they are on Facebook. And, like, they keep acknowledging, like, oh, I see the contradictions. I see how he teaches law. Yeah, Paul said that, but you're misunderstanding. But Paul says in this verse that you should keep the law. And then I have to keep saying, I'm like, don't you understand? He's a double-tongued devil. He teaches for the law sometimes, but he mostly teaches against it. And I bring out verses. I'm like, Romans 6:4, believers are not under the law. Romans 7:6, believers have been delivered from the law. Ephesians 2:15. The Messiah has abolished the law. And, like, even more blasphemous, Galatians 3:13, the law was a curse that the Messiah redeemed them from. Like, how is there misunderstanding?
100%.
And then they say, oh, you just don't understand. You don't understand.
Well,
like, no,
and I apply it, translate it. This helped me a lot. If you had a spouse and even 99% of the time, they spoke in a very manner. I mean, I don't think Paul comes anywhere close to being 99% for the law of the father. But say you have a spouse and they're 99% faithful, but then they have that one time a year where they go out with a mistress and go off and do a trip somewhere annually, you know, 364 days out of the year, they're faithful. If you're ever unfaithful, you're unfaithful. There isn't a weight of percentage that you can give. Truth versus lying, faithfulness versus unfaithfulness. If you are a deceiver one day out of the year, you're a deceiver. If one part of your message is a lie, you're a liar. And that's what I can't comprehend about people that say, oh, well, he said that there, but here he says the opposite, and they go with it as though he's trustworthy because he stands for truth here. Even though they can acknowledge he didn't stand for it there. It's like they take the colors in a color wheel and blend them and say, oh, we come up with a pretty color at the end of the day, and it's mostly a primary complementary color. It's not really that black, you know, or that dark. So, but it boils down to this. This is what I've come to understand about Paulines. They're self-serving. They want the grace. They don't want to give up the grace that Paul is serving. And they want to live their lives, as Chris said, in prosperity and in blending in so that they can be in pursuit of the Tower of Babel and have their lives the way that they want their lives. I mean, even the holidays serve that. The celebrations of the pagans serve that. And to divorce yourself from that and actually start following according to the Father is a tremendous sacrifice. And most of the time, you'll be able to find a secret sin that they don't want to let go of, that great they need grace to cover.
Yeah, totally. And I've said this multiple times, like, that I thought that what if Paul is like the devil himself? It's like a lot of what he's seen seems like what the devil would say, like, oh, you don't need to do the commandments, do works. Like, if you do works-based salvation, then the Messiah dying for you was nothing. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
well, as
like
the
that,
Messiah
like,
is the
like,
son of the Father, I think that Paul is at the very least the son of the devil. He is the Antichrist spirit, the first, or the original, the origin of the Antichrist spirit spoken of by Daniel the prophet. That's how I see it. The great flatterer that will come, that will lead so many astray using flattery, not using anything, any type of tool of malice that we would think would be easily identifiable. He uses flattery and turns people away from their deity, their God. And he perfectly fits those prophecies in the book of Daniel to me.
Well, he's just like so like fit, like similar to the devil, because that's the devil's whole plan is to, you know, the devil teach lawlessness since day one to Adam and Eve to break the law, and then to the Messiah himself, he says he was just trying to get him to break the law, and then just like how Paul does, he says like he quoted like it's written that if you jump off here, or that the messengers will rescue you so you don't dash your foot against a stone. And then he says, like no, like, you shall not tempt the Most High. And, you know, Paul's just doing the same thing. He's doing the same thing, just it's just, he's a man of lawlessness. He's a false prophet. He even says something like the signs and wonders were seen, observed through me. Do you know what verse I'm talking about?
Yes.
And the Messiah specifically said, like, he warned about someone coming with false prophets.
Isn't that interesting? The Messiah warns about one coming, performing signs and wonders, and that when I came in the name of the Father, you would not receive me, but one will come after me, coming in his own name, him you will receive. That's in John, is it 3:17, I think? Something like that, but it's in John. And also with the warnings of the, as you say, the signs and wonders. And Paul specifically says, I came in all manner of signs and wonders. And it's like, there it is, right in front of our face. And the majority of people sweep that under the carpet and say, oh, we're still looking for the Antichrist.
Well, that's where they go along and say, yeah, but in this verse, Paul taught the law. Paul taught, kept that, which goes back to the analogy you're saying earlier. And like how many analogies do I have to give? I'll give an even more extreme one. Like, okay, there's someone who's, like, righteous, and they do, like, they give to the poor, and they help out every day a year, and they're, like, volunteer, but once a year they go around murdering people. And so if you warn them, said, hey, that person's a murderer, and they say, no, but, you know, all these other days of the year they do, you know, they give to the poor, they help here, they help in the hospitals, they volunteer, but he's a murderer. But they say, but this, but that. But it's like, when you cross that line of wickedness, like, murder, you're a murderer. If you lie, you're a liar. If you're a blasphemer, Paul murdered, he lies, he blasphemes, and he's lawless. So it doesn't matter if he sometimes teaches, like, for the law, or he kept the Sabbath. Like, he's a lying, blaspheming, murdering, lawless, false prophet. Period. Like, enough with him. Like, these people are blinded. I don't get it. I don't get it. It seems like such common sense. But maybe it's like the Spirit of the Most High has to, you know, remove the scales from their eyes before they could see it. Because
I think it really is tied to, in order for somebody to see it, they really have to have a heart willing to seek after the Father. We're born into a world where we function in our society with our peers as long as we don't stand out as too different. When we stand out, even though there's been a turn in our society where it's been demanded that we accept those that are different, that applies to a certain group of people. It does not apply to the Judeo-Christian belief system of morality. If you want to stand up for the Ten Commandments, you're asking for persecution, largely because it's thought that you're coming against those that are different in a way of, like, the LGBTQ, and the protected religions, Middle Eastern religions, and so forth. When they are making moves towards society, accepting the ones that are or have been in times past more traditionally outcast, they're not talking about our group of people who are pursuing holiness. No, they think we're the cause of society ever rejecting others. So,
no, totally. Like I said, I think the Most High has to remove the scales from your eyes, and you have to have like a thirst for righteousness and like seek it out and like
yes, a willingness to be wrong about what you learned as well.
I discovered Paul is false not because somebody told me or I stumbled upon a video on YouTube or something. It was because I was going back and forth on social media with someone who said they were a believer and a truther who I was friends with. And it just happened naturally. Like, I was like, we're talking one week, and I said something about the Sabbath. I'm like, oh, no, I'm, you know, like, I don't do work on the Sabbath. It's like I just rest and relax. And he's like, he was like saying, like, oh, we don't have to do that anymore. Like, and then another thing was about, like, unclean foods. And I don't remember, there was, I think there was a third, maybe even a fourth thing. I don't remember the specific what they were, but I realized every time he would bring up, like, excuses for why he breaks the commands, the law, he was always quoting Paul. And that's what started me on the journey. Because I looked up, because I was like, no, we got to keep these, we got to keep the Sabbath. No, 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 that's unclean. And then he would quote Paul and say, oh, no, 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 but, you know, blah, 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 you know, Paul lies. And then that's what started me my journey, and I started looking and discovering it. I'm like, whoa, this guy's false. This guy's wicked. This is where they're getting it from. And, you know, that came from a righteous place of me just wanting to, like, share with someone who I thought was a friend. Like, I was trying to, like, you know, pull him out of the fire. I'm like, dude, if you don't keep the Sabbath, like, that's a serious commandment breaking. Like, we're going to be judged by our works. Revelation says everyone will be judged according to their works. And then he'd say, like, oh, works-based salvation is, like, false. Like, read this verse by Paul. And, like, they just don't want to let go of Paul, like, no matter how much evidence. And I'm just trying to figure out, I've told people, presented this so many different ways. I think my next approach is just going to be, did Paul say the law was nailed to the cross? Yes or no? Did Paul say we're delivered from the law? Yes or no? Does Paul say you don't need works? Yes or no? Did Paul say you could eat food sacrificed to idols? Yes or no? Does Paul say the law was a curse that the Messiah redeemed us from? Yes or no? And they're going to have to say yes. I already know what they're going to say. They're like, yeah, but you're misunderstanding him. You're misunderstanding him. Second Peter, you're misunderstanding him. And then when I show him the problems with Second Peter.
In your opening up the revelation of the warnings of signs and wonders, I found the actual verses and wanted to read them. Mark 13:22-23. For false prophets and fake prophets will rise up and perform signs and wonders as to deceive, if possible, even God's chosen ones or even the very elect. And then Matthew 24:24 is a repeat of that. For false Christs and false prophets will arise and perform great signs and wonders so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. Then we have Paul, Romans 15:19, in the power of signs and wonders, in the power of the Spirit, so that from Jerusalem and round about as far as Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. 2 Corinthians 11:12, the signs of a true apostle were performed among you with utmost patience and with signs and wonders and mighty works. And then you have Revelation 19:20, and the beast was seized, and with him the false prophet who performed signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who had received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. These two were thrown alive into the lake of fire, which burns with brimstone. And I think it's interesting, Matthew 24:24 talks about false Christ. When you compare the Messiah that Paul preaches, it is not the same one that walked in the book of Matthew, and that's shocking, I know. But the Messiah that walked in the book of Matthew, he says this, John 10:17, for this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. John 10:18, no one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I have received from my Father, versus Paul's Jesus, 2 Corinthians 4:14, knowing that he who raised the Lord Jesus will raise us also with Jesus and bring us with you unto his presence. Acts 5:3. The Elohim of our ancestors raised Yahushua from the dead after you killed him by hanging him on the cross. Romans 10:9. Here's Paul. If you confess with your mouth Jesus is Lord and believe in your heart that Elohim raised him from the dead, you will be saved. So you've got it right there in the sinner's prayer where Paul has people denying the power of the Messiah. Then Colossians 2:12, having been buried with him in baptism, in which you were also raised with him through faith in the powerful working of God who raised him from the dead. So those verses are what I would categorize as very flattering. If in standing alone, they sound very miraculous and powerful. But when we know the truth that the Messiah raised himself and that we were warned that there would be false Christ that would come and be spoken of, i.e. the one that Paul says he met in the desert with his three contradictory stories, we must be on guard, and that in conjunction with the false Christ is a false prophet, i.e. false teacher. And it just, you know, when you start seeing this, and then it becomes so clear that this beast system is the one that was created by Paul's flowering words.
No, exactly. I was going to say, now that I think about this more, it makes sense more to me that possibly that Paul's the false prophet, and then the beast is the beast. Because I was thought about this when you
is the Messiah that he created.
Yeah.
Image of the beast.
Also interesting.
He made an image of the true Messiah, but it became a beast because it was an image. It was false.
Well, if you, there's so many red flags with Paul's alleged conversion. Like you brought up, the three contradicting versions. Like you know, there's no witnesses, first off. And, you know, sometimes they heard the voice, but they didn't see it. And they saw the voice. They saw him, but they didn't hear him. And they stood up. But then, another version, they fell down. In one version, he was blinded and told where to go. In another version, none of that happened, and Messiah told him, this is your mission. And the biggest red flag, I think, is that Paul says he saw, like, a light at Yahushua in the flesh. And it says in John, it says, anyone who says the Messiah came in the flesh is of the Most High, but anyone who says the Messiah came not in the flesh is not of the Most High, and that's the spirit of the anti-Messiah. On top of that, this light apparition quoted the pagan deity Dionysus, it is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. And that's another huge red flag.
It's a slap in the face.
Why would he quote an enemy and someone in opposition, a satanic false deity? And then, boom, here's the last strike for the conversion. Paul said that he asked the light, who are you? And Yahushua HaMashiach clearly says, my sheep know my voice. I mean, that's open and
absolutely. And so I actually made a chart that went viral on Facebook. I still see it floating around, but I made a chart. is Paul credible? Version 1, Acts 9. Version 2, Acts 22. Version 3, Acts 26. So the categories are Paul saw the light, heard the sound, and fell to the ground. That happens in all three versions, okay? That's the only thing that is consistent. The men saw the light in Acts 22, the men saw the light. In Acts 9 and Acts 26, the men did not see the light. The men with Paul heard the voice and sound around. In Acts 9 and Acts 22, they heard the voice and the sound, but Acts 26, they did not hear the voice or the sound. Men with Paul fell to the ground. In Acts chapter 26, the men fell to the ground. In Acts 9 and Acts 22, the men did not fall to the ground. Paul was told what to do on the spot in Acts 26. He was not told what to do on the spot in Acts. This is backwards. He was told what to do on the spot in Acts 9 and Acts 22, but Acts 26, he was told to go into the city where he would find out what to do. And so not only is there no consistency, there are no two versions that are even correct or even identical. Okay, so if this man were being tried for a crime and his stories varied this much in these ways, he would be called a non-credible witness, which is very important to note. It's also very important to note that a story is omitted from the Bible that happened in between Acts 22 and Acts 26, where Paul is called out by Peter and told by Peter that even supposing that you did meet the Messiah, which I doubt, it sounds from the communication you're saying what he said to you that he's admonishing you and not calling you in the first place. And then all of a sudden you have this third version in Acts 26 where he says, go into the city and I will tell you what to do. And then following that, Paul states, I met with the lion's mouth, but survived it. And so it's thought that part of the reason why at least 22 and 26 don't jive is because Paul changes his story after being confronted by Peter as to be a liar and a deceiver. And yet what is exposed from his changing his story is that he is a liar and deceiver. So fortunately for those of us that are paying attention, we were thrown a clue, so to speak, to pay attention to, because anyone changing their story, there's a problem there. So, interesting.
Well, I really want to get a copy of the Clementine homilies. Is that where Peter just goes off, like, exposing Paul? Is that the Clementine homilies?
Yes.
Do you have any of those verses handy?
I actually know that it's in the book that I'm reading from. I'm not exactly sure where in the book it is. It might take me a minute to find it, but it's absolutely intriguing.
Well, if you don't mind looking at it, I'd love to hear it.
Sure.
But I have right now in front of me the verses that I referenced earlier. We're in John, where he talks about the spirit of the anti-Messiah. Could I read them real quick?
Sure.
How it connects to Paul. All right. So this is 1 John 4:1-3. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but try the spirits whether they are of the Most High, because many false prophets are gone out into the world. Hereby know ye the spirit of the Most High. Every spirit that confesses that Yahushua Messiah is come in the flesh is of the Most High. And every spirit not that Yahushua Messiah is come in the flesh is not of the Most High. And this is that spirit of anti-Messiah, whereof you have heard that it shall come, and even now already it is in the world. So it was already there at the time of the writing of John. And then again, in 2 John 1:7, for many deceivers are entered into the world who confess not that Yahushua Messiah is come in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an anti-Messiah. And it's really interesting that not only in Paul's Road to Damascus accounts, he says he didn't see Messiah in the flesh. He saw a light. In Romans 8:3, he actually says in his own words, in that it was weak through the flesh, the Most High sent his own Son in the likeness of sinful flesh. So he's in the likeness of the flesh. So he's confessing not Messiah in the flesh.
Yes. I've found some of this information, too, that you're asking for. Are Chris and Brandy, are y'all still with us? I'm checking the dashboard, and it shows that you're on. Let me see here.
Yes, Bryce, we're still here. We're enjoying listening to y'all. And
we are driving, so there is some road.
Yeah, there's some road background.
We just been on mute.
Okay, well, feel free to pop in there. It's really not that bad. I just was noting it if it were able to be improved. But it's fine if not. So evidence of Peter's testimony against Paul in a trial. Additional evidence, and this is found on page 311 of Jesus Words Only by Douglas J. Del Tondo. Additional evidence of a trial of Paul comes from a sermon collection called the Clementine Homilies from 200 AD. Scholars believe it contains a smaller fragment from an earlier Ebionite writing about a trial involving Paul and Paul with Peter as a star witness against Paul. This fragment is stuck inside a later story written to appear as if the opponent is someone called Simon Magus. This was apparently done to avoid the censor's hand. So Simon Magus is Paul. Instead, scholars deduce the original fragment was certainly talking about Paul. This can be validated by comparing what Peter says to how Paul responds in statements we find in Acts chapter 22 and Acts chapter 26. Homily 17 and the Trial of Paul. In this section of the Clementine Homilies, Peter asks Simon Magus publicly, why would Jesus come to an enemy in a vision? Peter wonders, why would Jesus spend years teaching the apostles to have their message supplanted by someone who merely claims to have had a vision of Jesus? These are all good questions, even if the fragments were really directed at a confrontation of Peter with Simon Magus. But was it? To answer that, we need more background. This dialogue appears as Peter's testimony in a trial atmosphere. It is found in Clementine Homilies, Homily 17. Scholars say this fragment's original source must have been written by the Ebionites. Later, it was inserted into the Clementine Homilies as if directed at someone else called Simon Magus. Scholars concur that its original context was written to tell what transpired when Peter was testifying against Paul. How do scholars deduce this? This fragment so clearly applies to Paul that it is inconceivable Simon Magus could involve all the same characteristics as Paul. As Alexander Roberts, the editor of the Anti-Nicene Fathers, explains, this passage has therefore been regarded as a covert attack upon the Apostle Paul. Likewise, Robert Griffin Jones, a pro-Pauline scholar, admits Paul is the true adversary in the passage. Paul is demonized in a fictional dispute in the Clementine homilies in which Peter trounces him. Bart Ellman concurs in the homily that Simon Magus, in fact, is a cipher for none other than Paul himself. You can decide for yourself. Here is the excerpt that has convinced scholars the target is Paul. This is Peter's statement at this trial of one who said he became his apostle, but Peter refutes. If then our Jesus appeared to you in a vision, made himself known to you, and spoke to you, it was as one who is enraged with an adversary, and this is the reason why it was through visions and dreams, or through revelations that were from without, that he spoke to you. But can anyone be rendered fit for instruction through apparitions? And if you will say it is possible, then I ask, why did our teacher abide and discourse a whole year to those who were awake? And how are we to believe your word when you tell us that he appeared to you? And how did he appear to you when you entertained opinions contrary to his teaching? But if you were seen and taught by him and became his apostle for a single hour, proclaim your utterances, interpret his sayings, love his apostles, contend not with me who companied with him, for in direct opposition to me, who am a firm rock, the foundation of the church, you now stand. If you were not opposed to me, you would not accuse me and revile the truth proclaimed by me in order that I may not be believed when I state what I myself have heard with mine own ear from the Lord, as if I were evidently a person that was condemned and in bad repute. But if you say that I am condemned, you bring an accusation against God, who revealed the Christ to me, and you inveigh against him, who pronounced me blessed on account of the revelation. But if indeed you really wish to work in the cause of truth, learn first of all from us what we have learned from him, and becoming a disciple of the truth, become a fellow worker with us. Clementine Homily 17:19. Let's test the possibility that Peter did in fact deliver this speech and Paul heard it. We will find evidence in the New Testament that Paul was aware of this charge that Peter made as recorded in the Clementine homilies. Paul's knowledge of this charge can be proven in how Paul embarrassingly changed his accounts of his vision with Jesus. The version in Acts 22 is precisely the vision that Peter is addressing in homily 17, as it lacks any positive words from Jesus toward Paul. This must be what pressures Paul later to change the account into what we see in Acts 26. This account reverses the Acts chapter 22 account. It puts words in Jesus' mouth for the first time that are positive toward Paul. However, Paul changing the accounts, he demonstrates a clear contradiction with the earlier version in Acts 22. Thus, Acts 26 account eliminates the point Peter raises in the Clementine homily 17. However, it does so at a great price, terrible embarrassment, when the latter version of Acts 26 is compared to Paul's earlier version account in Acts 22. Only something precisely like Peter's speech in homily 17 can explain such a risky reversal of the vision account. We next examine the evidence for this. So then it goes on to deeper analysis. But that's what was very interesting to me. He really lays Paul flat in that letter.
Wow. I really need to get that book.
Yeah,
I have
definitely recommend you get the book, Jesus Words Only, and the Clementine homilies as well. Jesus Words Only, Douglas J. Del Tondo. It is available for free online. However, having the book in your hand, there's really nothing that compares to that.
Going back to what you said. What was that, Chris? I can't hear him. Can you?
Chris, you're muted. I think you were trying to speak something.
We were just saying we agree with that. We've enjoyed reading that book.
And all the great points you make, pointing out the false apostle Paul and exactly why, how it goes against the words of Messiah.
You can find it at jesuswordsonly.github.io. That's github.io. That's jesuswordsonly.github.io. And I found things in the actual book that are not in here and vice versa. So it's good to have access to both, really. But we are at 12:30, believe it or not. So it is already parting time, I hate to say.
We have time
if
one
you
more
guys
verse.
Want to say any last words or anything.
Yeah,
we enjoyed it.
Just real quick.
Sure.
What you said earlier about Revelation, about the beast and the false prophet and those who got the mark of the beast, it's really interesting. Philemon 3:17, Paul says, "Brethren, be followers together of me, and mark them which walk so as ye have as an ensemble." So follow him.
Absolutely.
And followers are marked.
Bingo.
So it wouldn't be hard to draw
Christians
the conclusion
are being
that
marked.
Paul.
As
Paul is. The false prophet,
Pauline
and
Christians,
his Messiah,
I should say,
the beast.
Yes, it's
so
a terrible
Paul,
and
your mark.
Unbelievable revelation. Yes, I think this is what made Daniel sick at his stomach.